The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the first ESPN FC of 2021, a year that starts with Manchester United now level on points at the top of the table after a 2-1 victory against Aston Villa. Here to discuss it with us, Stevie Nicholls, Julian Laron and Ian Dark. Ian, we've seen a lot of dross in the Premier League over the last couple of weeks. This was an excellent game, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think a few teams have been looking off the boil, but this really was a very, very exciting game, and full credit to Aston Villa, who put on quite a performance. It wasn't quite enough on the night. Manchester United, who'd have thought it? They were 15th on November the 1st. Since then, they've taken 26 points out of the last 30. They obviously look very, very dangerous going forward at the moment, and they do look a bit of a different team. Whether they can sustain it, we'll see. I was looking up just now the fixtures. They play Liverpool at Anfield on January the 16th.
Wow. Stevie, what's changed during the last couple of months that have seen United put in this run?
I think Pogba, particularly today, has shown that he's coming back. He's got actually better and better during this run. When he's come on. As a sub, and now that he's starting, so that makes a huge difference. And then you've got Rashford and Fernandes, who as a pairing, just how do you mark them? I mean, it's tough to mark Rashford with the runs he makes, and it's tough to find out where Bruno Fernandes is. You know, he's constantly in motion. He's very hard to deal with, very hard to pick up, and he can pick a pass. And so they're creating chances. I mean, my goodness, they could have had, what, 5 or 6 goals today with what they created. I think they've gotten a little fortunate defensively. They've gotten away. Certainly, they got away with today. And in previous games, they've made mistakes. And actually, the man that we've all questioned previously, De Gea, has been making saves like he did today. So it's a combination of how good they are going forward. De Gea certainly looks back in form. And they've got a little stroke of luck here and there.
Go on then, Jules. Say nice things about Paul Pogba.
I was waiting for the question. I was hoping you would ask it. But we said last night, didn't we? We said on yesterday's show that when he's in that kind of form, he's a starter every day in that team, and he brings so much to that team. He recovers the ball on the first goal. He gets the penalty on the second one. There's a lot of creativity. There's a lot of movement. There's a lot of work rate as well. It's when he doesn't fancy it and when he's not, you know, on a good day, that obviously there's questions about his place in the team. But we've always said from the beginning of the season, wait until he's fit. And once he's fit, things will be different because he needs to be fully fit to be able to express himself like he did tonight.
He was great, wasn't he, today, Ian?
Yeah, Pogba was very commanding. I mean, he's got to be doing that every week. He obviously hasn't done that every week amid all the various stories we've heard from his agent at Old Trafford, which have been, frankly, disruptive. But when you see him playing like that, like he plays for France or like he played for France at the World Cup, he walks into any team. He was super commanding out there tonight. I mean, it was interesting. Stevie said Manchester United could have had 6 tonight. That's right. But I think Villa could have had 4. As well. So it was that kind of game, rich in entertainment, and the Premier League needed it after not a great week.
Very entertaining, but also a bit of controversy as well. Penalty for you, Stevie?
Yeah, penalty kick, absolutely. Listen, it's bad defending from Douglas Luiz. You know, instead of just staying behind Pogba, making him play the ball back to Shaw, who takes the throw, keep it simple. Instead, he's always trying to get in front of Pogba. Pogba rolls him, now they're in the box. And when you're in the box as a defender, it's your responsibility not to get tangled up with your opponent. And that's what happens. He's behind Pogba. Pogba's left foot catches Luiz's calf. It then trips Pogba up. It is a penalty all day long, and it's poor defending. As was the first, by the way, from Tyrone Mings.
Yeah, what happened to Mings on the first one, Steve? He just seemed to just lose track of the ball, mistimed it?
He's misread it. Yeah, he's misread the flight of it. 100%, misread the flight of it, and then by the time he has to react, the ball's moving at such pace he doesn't. You've got to give Martial credit, though. He's made the run. It's a good centre-forward run. He's gambled, he's concentrated, he's thinking that Tyrone Mings is going to miss it, and he does, and he puts it home. So credit to Martial.
Ian, back to the penalty. Was it right call?
Yeah, I think it was. Stevie's description of it is very good. I mean, I think we've seen way too many penalties this season. We're heading for a record by miles. But yeah, technically it was when it was on the soft side, but it was a penalty.
Jeff Winter, the former Premier League referee, Jules tweeted out, never a penalty in a million years, but what do I know?
You know better than him, I think. I mean, I think we all know. Who is he anyway? I mean, what era, what decade was he refereeing? Because, if that's not a pen, and he would have been sat in front of his TV like us, with all the replays and everything, where you clearly see that is a pen. And it was given by the ref, it was backed up by the VAR as well. So I don't know where it's coming from on that one.
Jules, if it wasn't given, do you think VAR would have then given it? Was it one of those?
I think it was a clear. It would have been a clear and obvious mistake by the referee if he had not given that one. It's not one where, you know, we always said, "Oh, I've seen those given" or "I've seen those not given." I think it was clear enough, in my opinion at least, that if the ref had missed it because maybe he wouldn't have seen it properly, or maybe he was not too sure about it, I think VAR would have rectified it and given it.
Ian.
I'm not sure about that, whether I agree, because I'm not sure it would have been seen, had he given it the other way, as a clear and obvious error, because there was a little question of whether Pogba had caught his own back leg. But I do think when you looked at it again, it was definitely a penalty. He was caught by Douglas Luiz. But I'm not sure there'd have been an overrule. We'll never know, will we, frankly?
No. So do we actually think, Do we actually think now that if a referee doesn't give a penalty and then it goes to VAR, I think this. I think that the VAR officials are doing everything they can not to give a penalty so as not to make the referee look bad. Regardless, you know, instead of it's either is a penalty or it isn't, I think they absolutely, if they can help out the guy that hasn't given it, I think they're going to do it.
Yeah, but it can't be, Stevie, it can't just be an alternative opinion. That's not what VAR was set up to do. It was set up to
clear up serious
errors on the original decision. Otherwise, you're just going to get the game being re-refereed.
It's definitely not black and white, VAR. There are definite grey areas in some of these cases, and I'm just saying that, and if there's possibly a grey area, then 100% they're going to go with the guy that never gave it.
We talked about, Ian, and we've spoken about it over the last couple of weeks, how you look at Manchester United and slowly but surely they've made themselves title contenders. Are they the contenders now to Liverpool?
No, I think it's a very open year, this. I mean, it's interesting. You look at the table now. Remember, the title's been won with close to 100 points. I think City got 100 and then they got 98 and then Liverpool got 99. It won't be like that this year. If you do the mathematics and project it on at the current sort of rate of points per games, this title could be won with as few as 80. Now, that's like the old days. And what it does, I think, is it lets in a possible outsider, maybe like a Leicester City, to get a far more serious chance than you might have given them at the start of the season. And remember, too, that the big clubs have got to play European football in the second half of the season, and the other teams will get far more clear weeks. So they'll have maybe fresher legs. So it's fascinating, absolutely fascinating title race. A weird one, but fascinating nonetheless.
What do you think, Jules?
I don't know. I still don't think this United team has the collective strength and the collective unity to be able to go all the way for the remaining, 22 games left in the season, to be able to compete with Liverpool all the way to the end and push them really far. That collective strength might come a bit later in the season, maybe, but I still think that right now they still rely on those moments of brilliance, that we saw. The first goal, okay, is the build-up is good and it's a good team goal, I guess. But overall, I think too much is still down to individuals more than the strength of your team as a collective. And I think unless you have that, it's still really hard to go and compete for a title. When you face a team like Liverpool or Man City and plenty of others who could also go and win the game, but who are stronger than you collectively.
Stevie?
Well, I think Liverpool are still the favourites. But, you know, the league this year is kind of similar to when Leicester won it from nowhere. You know, we thought all the big teams, as the season went on, would get better and better and they would falter. And it just didn't happen. Nothing changed. All the sides around them just kept dropping points and picking points up and drawing and losing and this and that. And that's kind of where it is right now. I think Liverpool are a cut above the rest. It's up to them, in my opinion. They can go and win it. But after that, it really could be one of, what, four other teams right now?
One of those teams surely have to be Manchester City, who are currently, of course, sitting eighth in the table. Yet two wins would take them to third behind the top two, given that they've got those two games in hand. Their big game against Chelsea. What a match this is going to be on Sunday. We asked your boys for your predictions for this one. Jules and Ian, you both went for a City win. Jules, this in spite of the fact they're obviously going to be missing some key players.
Yeah, there are five players out, apart from Gabriel Jesus and Kyle Walker and Ederson, who is himself on social media, said that he was self-isolating. We're not sure who the other two are. I still think this is a team with more momentum than Chelsea, who are in crisis, who haven't won in four games now, who are finding it really difficult to score, but also to not concede. And I think City could go there, even with a double pivot, even with a bit more cautious approach like we've seen this season in big games, still be able to go there and I think get a win. And that's why I predicted them to win. I still don't think this Chelsea team right now, low on confidence, with Lampard still finding in January the right formula, still looking for the right formula, how to where to play who, how, and without Ziyech probably, who will be on the bench. I don't expect him to start. I think it will be City to win this game.
This should be a great game, Ian, but we've said that about matches this season quite a lot that involve the big sides. And you get a feeling in some of these matches, they're just playing not to lose. It's not going to happen again, is it?
I don't think it's in Manchester City's DNA and probably not in Chelsea's either to play it not to lose. Not maybe until late in the game when they might look at the situation and say, well, OK, well, we'll take the point if it's the scores are level still on 85 minutes. I mean, the interesting thing is Zach Steffen, who's the USA's international goalkeeper, could be making his Premier League goalkeeper debut in this game for Manchester City. What a massive game for him to play in. I hear that Hakim Ziyech, who's been injured, might well be available for Chelsea. That would be interesting. But I'm with Julian a little bit about this. I think Manchester City are becoming a bit of a mean machine at the moment. I've seen them quite a lot lately. They just don't let in goals. I think they've let in two goals in the last 10 matches. They've got the best defence in the Premier League. They've changed their style a bit, and I think they'll nick it.
You're going for the draw, Stevie?
Yeah. I can't separate them. You know, Of late Chelsea, yes, have let in a couple of goals, but up until then, they were rock solid. We're talking about City, who right now look pretty rock solid. But then you still got both teams who going forward. Who's going to be scoring the goals? You know, I think this is going to be a score and draw. So I think both teams are going to score. I just can't separate them. That's the honest truth why I've gone for the draw. I think they're as good. Or they can be as good or as bad as each other going forward. And they can be the same defensively. So I'm smack bang right on the fence.
Ian?
Well, I think it's hard to predict. I mean, we sit here. I mean, I'm the guy that a couple of weeks ago said that Liverpool were going to have a hard game at Crystal Palace. So predictions are there to make idiots of all of us. But I just think City are in quite a good place at the moment. And I'm not sure Chelsea are quite in that same position. There are a few question marks. Havertz and Werner are not firing for whatever reasons at the moment. Do they know exactly what the best team is? I just think Manchester City, unless maybe we don't know. I mean, as Julian said, we don't know who the other two COVID cases are who might not play. Now, if one of those is Kevin De Bruyne, and I've got no knowledge of that at all, but if it is, that changes the dynamic completely.
That, of course, the big game on Sunday. Saturday kicks off with the intriguing fixture Spurs taking on Leeds. We asked your prediction for this one, boys. All of you thought it was going to be 3-2, so that definitely won't be the score. Meanwhile, West Brom taking on Arsenal, of course, in the big battle at the bottom half of the table. Everyone believing that Arsenal are going to go on and win that game. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Just a reminder, the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast is available to download now. Speaking of Jules, we asked him to give us his 2020 team of the year. This, of course, the calendar year. Stephen, what do you make of it?
Well, actually, it's very hard to disagree with 99% of it. I disagree with only one, really. Or I can put an argument up for somebody else for one, and that's Marquinhos at centre-back. I mean, I would have... Listen, Van Dijk wasn't at his imperial best when he came back, just before he got injured, but he was still better than Marquinhos, as was Koulibaly, and I think I put Upamecano's better than him as well. So Marquinhos is really the only one I can really put an argument up for, because the rest were fantastic.
Jules?
Yeah, no, I mean, in my head, the rule, the number one was like, you need 11 players who have played through the whole year. You can't have someone who's been injured for 3 months or 4 months or half of the season who didn't play the first half of the season, only the second half of the season or the other round. That's the only reason why I didn't put Van Dijk in there. Otherwise, of course, he would have been there with Alaba, and there was no even debate. So then I looked on who, after Van Dijk, could have come in, and I just thought Marquinhos has been so influential with PSG by winning the domestic travel, of course, but that's kind of easy. But also in the Champions League, to take them all the way to the final. You know, Upamecano was terrible in the semi-final against PSG, for example, in the Champions League. He had made mistakes before. He'd made mistakes since, again, against PSG in the group stage, six weeks ago, for example. So based on all of that, and I looked at other centre-backs too, I just thought Marquinhos just deserved to be there. And also, I had to have a PSG player.
Jules, who got the most goals in the calendar year?
Cristiano Ronaldo got the most goals.
Surely Cristiano Ronaldo should be in there ahead of Haaland.
What? Because now we have to put the guy who scored the most goals in your team.
Stevie, what are you doing with your eye? We can see you.
Oh, sorry. Something in the corner of my eye. Well, I can't see you. I'm looking at me all the time, so I don't know when you can and can't see me.
Well, we can definitely see you poking your eye out, trying to get something out of it.
What's something?
So Ronaldo was never...
I tell you what, I've taken the pressure. I've taken the pressure right off Jules' team, by the way.
So Ronaldo was never in the conversation? Why Haaland?
No, he was. Of course he was in the conversation. I just thought Haaland has had such an incredible impact, you know, through the whole year, especially since he's moved to Borussia Dortmund. I thought he'd been fantastic. Cristiano has been good, but Cristiano, I just feel, even with Juventus, never reached the height that collectively the team could have taken him to, you know. And I just think same for Messi. I think Messi this year, especially this season, so in the last 4 months, Messi has been a bit disappointing. I think Cristiano has been disappointing. Juventus, you know, are not doing well in the league. And I just think that reflects as well why neither of them is in that team, and Haaland and Lewandowski are.
What about your boy, Benzema? Won La Liga for Real Madrid. Key to them up the table once again this season. As much as you can put Haaland in, great up-and-coming talent, when it comes to the finished product, Benzema at the moment is up there with Lewandowski, isn't he?
I know. It was that close. It was him or Haaland. And I just think the game against Manchester City really was I think the decider, although Dortmund didn't go much further anyway. They stopped at the same stage of the season. However, Haaland, because of his age, I just thought it was there. But Benzema was so close, and I was like, oh, if I put a French guy as well, they're going to be on my case. And I've So I was hesitating so much, and in the end I chose Haaland. But Benzema deserves to be there as well, of course.
I was actually trying to figure out how to shoehorn Benzema in as well, and I was thinking about moving Müller, and then I started reviewing some of the stats he's got. I mean, absolutely incredible. Mm-hmm. You know, he's certainly not as silky. He's not as silky as Benzema, but for actually what he produces and what he gives to the team, there's no way he wouldn't get in this team.
Ian, what problems do you have with Jules' team?
Well, actually, I looked at it and I thought that maybe Jules should get the job as the Paris Saint-Germain coach based on that. It's a fantastic team, isn't it? I couldn't really seriously argue. Maybe you might argue with the goalkeeper. You could maybe make a case for Oblak or Alisson. That might have been close. But Bayern Munich were the team of the year. So I'm not really arguing with that. But who'd have thought it? Who'd have thought, you know, in the last 5 years we would have ever picked a World 11 which would not have Cristiano Ronaldo or Lionel Messi in it. But I think Jules is right. Probably on this year, that is the right pick. So I think his world team would beat Mars convincingly.
For more of the nonsense from the boys, be sure to check out Extra Time. You can watch that over on our YouTube channel.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
The transfer window, of course, opens in January. Transfer Talk over on the website should be your first port of call for all the latest news regarding who is going where. Gab Margotti is with us now to discuss some of those possible transfers. Gab, let's start off with Liverpool. Of course, a number of injuries at the back. Could we see them coming in for a defender this month?
I think that's definitely something that they're going to look at. Obviously, Joe Gomez, Virgil van Dijk out until the end of the season, I think or for much of the rest of the season. I think the dilemma is going to be, do you go with a kid who might one day become your starter, bearing in mind you've also had the opportunity to assess Reece Williams a little bit, or do you go maybe for a shorter-term veteran? One guy they've been linked with is Sven Botman, who from Lille, who obviously would be more in the sort of future prospect type category, because he's only played 10 matches in Ligue 1. He's very young, but again, you would have to class him as one for the future.
Gab, when I asked you before the start of the show what other transfers you wanted to talk about, you said Olivier Giroud. Why on earth would Chelsea let him go?
Well, I think Olivier Giroud is a classic situation where you have somebody whose contract is winding down, who wants playing time. I think this is more one for the end of the season, but I think now he's getting that playing time that's important for him vis-a-vis the Euros. But I think by the same token, he's also going to want a new deal or want to continue playing next year or maybe a new deal from Chelsea. So he fits into that category of situations where I think clubs have big calls to make. And this is where, of course, he can be approached by other clubs who might be interested in him.
But he's not going anywhere, is he, in January, Gab? You imagine he'll stay?
I think Chelsea would want to hang on to him, obviously. But equally, you know, if he doesn't, you know, if he doesn't get a new contract, if he works his way towards free agency, you know, from next season, he can already sign with another club as early as this January.
Meanwhile, Gab, let's talk about Paulo Dybala, shall we? Of course, excellent under Sarri at the end of last season. This season, he's an absolute stinker. Can we see him leaving Juventus?
again, it's one of those situations, and you're going to hear me repeat this several times, that, you know, you can't look at, we're in a crisis. You can't look at people in a vacuum away from their contracts. Paulo Dybala has 18 months left. It's exactly like the Paul Pogba situation. The difference here is that Juventus have offered him a new deal. Apparently, it's quite far off what Dybala believes he's worth. And so, from Juve's perspective, they either give him a new deal or otherwise, the best time to shift him would be now, because he's still far enough from free agency, you know, that you can get hopefully something close to market value for him. That said, anybody bringing Dybala in will likely have to give him quite a lot of money in wages, probably, you know, certainly more than what Juve were offering him. And so that's the conundrum there for Dybala and for Juventus. I wouldn't be surprised if Juve tried, if they think that they can get some money back from, if they try to push him out the door at the right price.
Now, speaking of contracts, I feel as is tradition on New Year's Day every year, ESPN AFC put out the best 11 with regards to players with contracts that will expire at the end of the season. What was interesting, what struck me, Gab, was Donnarumma. How Milan let it get to, what, 6 months to go without him signing a new contract?
Well, I mean, in some ways, this has to do with the previous administration at Milan, when Lee Yong-hong and his people were in charge, and Fassone, of course. You had a situation where he signed an absolutely, I think he was still, what, 18, 19 at the time. He signed an absolutely enormous contract that made him the second highest paid goalkeeper in the world at the time. I think now, even now, he's still the third highest paid keeper in the world. His agent, of course, is Mino Raiola, which, you know, is a tough, who's obviously a tough negotiator. I think Milan waited on the contract because they couldn't reach a deal with Raiola. I think they realize how important he is, because he's 21 years old. He's already played hundreds of games for the club. Equally, they can't be held to ransom. Equally, what plays into this as well with Donnarumma is, you know, we're talking about a goalkeeper, and we're talking about, you know, a huge salary should he leave on a free transfer. The kind of clubs that can afford enormous salaries for goalkeepers, many of them already have a top-notch keeper and aren't necessarily looking for one. That plays in Milan's favor. Some suggestion, I think this might be the way that ultimately this resolves itself, is that he does resign, maybe with a small pay bump, maybe not, maybe something bonus-laden, but Mino Raiola insists on putting in some sort of release clause in the next couple years, so that if suddenly one of the big boys needs a goalkeeper, then of course Mino Raiola's client will be in the mix. Obviously, from Milan's perspective, they hope it becomes a new point, because Donnarumma has said before, and you tend to believe him, he never wants to leave Milan.
If you're wondering what Gav's wishes are for 2021, fear not, you can check them out over on the website. 30 of them in all their glory are there. And by the way, if you're wondering why I didn't ask Gav about Messi, he spoke about it a lot in our prediction special. You can check that out. That is available now.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
After a much shorter break than normal, the Bundesliga returns this weekend, as does another excellent column by Derek Ray. Be sure to check that out over on the website, as he's discussing whether or not anyone can challenge Bayern Munich, who, of course, will start 2021 in a very familiar position. Top of the table, 2 points clear of Bayer Leverkusen and Leipzig. As you welcome in, Archie Rintutt. Happy New Year to you, Archie. We can pretend that I haven't said that already off air, but there we are. We'll say it again. Archie, let's talk about fourth versus fifth this weekend. Wolfsburg against Borussia Dortmund. The big question around that game is whether or not Erling Haaland will be back.
He will be. He will start, I think, against Wolfsburg on Sunday. And Borussia Dortmund have really missed him. Just before Christmas, they had that very painful defeat to Union Berlin and showed up their weakness in defending set pieces, as was shown a few weeks before that against Cologne as well. And it's not in that department that Erling Haaland is necessarily going to help out. It's his one-man missions of digging them out up front. And that's actually something that you could say he'd been carrying the team even so far this season, such as the way that Dortmund have looked without him. So Dortmund also on the cusp of losing four Bundesliga home games in a row for the first time since 1999-2000 season as well, which shows you quite how bad things have been going for them. And Wolfsburg, as their position in the table shows, are one of the best sides in the division. They've only lost one game so far this season in the Bundesliga, and that was to Bayern Munich. And I think that Dortmund have to be wary, particularly of the threat that Wout Weghorst poses up front. He's somebody that I think will be moving on from Wolfsburg and the Bundesliga perhaps in the summer to come. So it's shaping up to be a good game, I'd say.
It's got a double header on Sunday, isn't it? It starts with Borussia Dortmund and then Bayern Munich against Mainz. What should I ask you about this game, Archie?
If I was you, I'd say, well, isn't it quite something that Joshua Kimmich is back?
Yeah. Of course, we saw him limp off, didn't we? Injured, looks like he would be out for a sustained period. And what, it's only been a couple of months?
Yeah, he returned as a substitute during the game away at Leverkusen and made a telling impact as well, setting up Robert Lewandowski for the winning goal there, even if Bayer Leverkusen gave away both goals in that game. But Kimmich is somebody that Bayern have missed. In fact, if you look at the seven games if you look at when Kimmich has not completed any of the last seven games, Bayern have conceded first in all of those and somehow still not lost any of them, which says something for the character of the team. But I'd say that none of their best performances this season have been without Joshua Kimmich. He gives them a tempo and a presence that I don't think anyone else can offer with in the rest of the squad. So having Joshua Kimmich and Leon Goretzka back, plus Bayern being able to have a little bit of a breather, because you could really tell that they just can't quite keep up the same level of pressing and intensity due to the amount of games that they've been having to play so far this season. I would worry if I was Mainz here, particularly because they're on their third coach of the season. Jan Sievert, who's head of the youth academy, will be stepping up for this game, just as we wait to see who Mainz are going to appoint to follow Jan Moritz Lichter. But there's been some restructuring at the top of the club. Christian Heidel, who made his name when Jürgen Klopp and Thomas Tuchel were coaches of the club, he's come back in upstairs in the club. And Martin Schmidt, a former coach of the club, is going to be the sporting director. But yeah, Mainz are a club who are in real danger. And when you're in real danger, you don't want to go and play Bayern Munich away.
A distinct possibility that Bayern, though, won't be top of the table going into that clash, given the fact that both Leipzig and Bayer Leverkusen are in action on Saturday. Leipzig taking on Stuttgart, Bayer Leverkusen taking on Frankfurt. Who could have the biggest challenge out of those two matches to get the win?
I kind of want to sit on the fence here and say even, because Frankfurt away and Stuttgart away, even though Stuttgart have not won a home game this season, Stuttgart are having a very good season by the standards of a promoted club. That said, there have been some off-the-pitch noise. There's been some off-the-pitch noise, which is something which is very familiar to Stuttgart fans, with Thomas Hitzlsperger and Klaus Voigt, the president, having something of a war of words, as Hitzlsperger, who is chairman at the club, saying that he wants to become the president of the club, and that's obviously the role that's held by Fort, which is a shame for Stuttgart if that was to overshadow what's been going on the pitch, because they've been playing some enterprising football, one of the most exciting teams to watch in the division, and coming up against Leipzig, a team who have been in very good form themselves. Disappointing end to last year with a nil draw against Cologne, but that should be a quite open and exciting game to watch. As for Frankfurt against Leverkusen, for my money, the best team to watch in the Bundesliga so far this season. They only have themselves to blame that they lost to Bayern last time out. I question whether they can quite find the same rhythm and the same intensity that they had before. Having a 10-day break or so now, not necessarily going to help them. And you saw that they were a little bit slow to start the season. But Frankfurt have only lost a handful of games, underperforming given the fact that they've not been in European competition this year. I'd expected a little bit more from them. But Frankfurt is a difficult place to go and play. Only Bayern have really taken them apart this season. They won 5-0 against them earlier this season. So I think Leverkusen deserve a lot of credit for being in the position that they're in now. But whether or not that they're going to be top of the table come the time that Bayern play, such is the nature of the Bundesliga, I can't say with a straight face that, yeah, absolutely both of those sides are going to win at those games.
Meanwhile, at the bottom of the table, it's all about Schalke, who are looking to avoid the unenviable record of not winning 30 Bundesliga matches in a row.
Yes, so the Bundesliga record, Dan, is 31 games. And that goes back to 1966 with Tasmania Berlin. Now, Tasmania Berlin have even come out and said that they hope Schalke win soon because they don't want their record to be taken away. They were something of a historic case because it was a team made up of amateur players and they quite enjoyed their year in the Bundesliga. It was a bit of a laugh. But for Schalke, it's far from that. This is very serious. The fact that they are on now their fourth coach of the season, Huub Stevens, came in for the cup game and the league game against Arminia Bielefeld just before the end of 2020. And now Christian Groß, a name that we've not seen in the Bundesliga in a decade, when he re-energized Stuttgart and took them into European football, is the man tasked with saving their bacon. Sead Kolasinac is returning to Schalke on loan, which I think is a good sign. I think he's better than Schalke's left-back option there. But they're playing against a Hertha side who have underperformed this season, given the expectations, the amount of money that has been spent there. Okay, there are some big characters that they've had to replace there. But the fact that John Cordoba comes back from injury, I think, is a very positive thing for them. Let's see what kind of a reaction Christian Groß can get. See if it's any better than the one that Manuel Baum, the second coach that Schalke had this season, was able to coerce, because Schalke have been absolutely terrible and deserve to be in the place that they are on the table right now.
Arthur Rintat, as always, thank you very much, mate. Much appreciated. So Schalke against Hertha Berlin is at 12:30 on Saturday live on ESPN+. Some cracking matches to start 2021 in Germany. After a short break, Italian football returns this weekend. Our feature game on ESPN Plus, Juventus taking on Udinese. Gab Marcotti is back with us. Gab, is a distinct possibility that Juve could go into this game 13 points off the top of the table?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, in terms of results, Juventus aren't where they want to be right now. I don't think there's any question about that. A lot's going to depend, obviously, also on the game in hand that they have against Napoli with the 3 points that they were awarded and then were taken away in that fiasco. But I think, you know, the real test for this team is, can they implement what Pirlo's asking him to do? And is what Pirlo's asking him to do the right thing for Juventus to do? I think it is, but others may differ.
Are the players on side, Gab, still?
Every indication is that the players like him, that the players enjoy him, that, you know, that there's a two-way thing. I think they felt that, you know, maybe they had found, you know, some of the balance in the team and in some of the recent outings where you know, you saw sort of more crosses coming in. Obviously, when you have Ronaldo and Morata up front, that's you've got two excellent headers of the ball. You know, maybe when you go on the counter, maybe don't just leave two guys back, maybe leave somebody for the transition. Personally, I think this is only going to work when they have a real playmaker in midfield who's both comfortable in possession and creative. That man it could be Rodrigo Bentancur. I don't think it is. Pretty sure it's not Arthur. So I think this issue is going to continue. They may look to pick somebody up in January, but I think most likely this is something that gets addressed in the summer.
Our early game on Sunday on ESPN2, Inter Milan taking on Crotone. Meanwhile, Milan are away against Benevento. From those two matches, Gab, which Milan side is more likely to drop points?
Well, Benevento have been, they've sprung one or two surprises. They're an unpredictable side. So I would probably lean towards Milan, perhaps, more likely to drop points, given also that Inter, in the last outings under Antonio Conte, they've been more conservative, more grinded out, more, you know, let's keep people back and let's unleash Lukaku and Hakimi on the counter and then they can't be stopped. However, all that said, you know, Inter is still Inter for a reason. So I'll be totally on the fence who's more likely to drop points. But I'll tell you what, given the way the season's going, I think you're going to see two very, very close games in both instances.
Gab Marcotti, as always, thank you very much. Gab will be with me with Matteo and Jurgen Klinsmann for the build-up to that feature game, Juventus against Udinese. Just a reminder, that is at 2 p.m. on ESPN+. Plus, all your Italian matches are on Sunday. What a cracking day it looks likely it will be.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's Rangers against Celtic tomorrow morning, a match which is live on ESPN+. Celtic go into the game 16 points adrift of Steven Gerrard's side at the top of the table. They do have, though, three games in hand. Calling that game will be Mark Donaldson and our very own Stevie Nicol. Stevie, if Rangers win this, they're done, aren't they? They win the title.
Well, if they win this game, that would put them, what, 19 points now? With even though Celtic would have those three games in hand, it seems hard to believe that Celtic could claw that back. Listen, Rangers haven't lost a Premier League game this season. They're a settled side. They're playing good football. They're scoring goals. And they go into this game absolutely big, big, big favourites for Celtic. But then this is what an old firm game's probably about. Celtic, although they've only lost one game themselves, and that was to Rangers this season, they've been struggling a little. They've managed to get some results when they probably shouldn't have. They've had to make a lot of changes. You know, so things are pretty unsettled at Celtic right now. You know, Neil Lennon is actually hanging on to his job, and it's because if Celtic win the league this year, they will be the first side in Scottish history to win the league 10 years in a row. Both sides have won it 9 in a row. And of course, Celtic fans are not happy. They're so far behind. So Neil Lennon really, in my opinion, if Neil Lennon loses this game, he will probably lose his job.
Be sure to join us on the next edition of the show. Plenty to discuss. Jan Arge Fjortoft will be here to review what happened in the Bundesliga. Plus, Craig and Frank take a look back at the big games in the Premier League, plus look ahead as well to Chelsea against Manchester City. Just to tie a bow on it, Dean Smith not agreeing with any of our boys, talking about the penalty. I thought it was a penalty at the time, but I looked at it after the game and saw he tripped himself. I don't see why Michael Oliver couldn't have looked at it. That's what VAR is for, isn't it? He's tripped himself up. These margins in football, I've seen it again, and I don't think it's a penalty. Well, nonetheless then, Manchester United getting all 3 points, level at the top of the table now with Liverpool. That's it then. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to everyone who has been on. Stay tuned, though. Extra time is next. Ian, Jules and Stevie answering your questions. Welcome into the first extra time of 2021. Ian Dark, Julian Laurent and Stevie Nicol with me to answer your tweets. And the first one is about New Year's Eve. How did you celebrate? Stevie, did you make it to midnight?
Didn't I know. I was in my bed at 9:45. We never celebrate midnight, Pogmini.
No.
Don't do it.
No, it's a bit late. Bit late for you, Stevie. Ian, did you make it to midnight?
Oh yeah, I always stay up, but I'm not really a New Year kind of guy. But I stay up and watch a show called Jules Holland here in the UK, where yeah. They have a lot of rock stars on and that. So that's quite a nice way to send
Jules
into New
Holland.
Year,
he's still going.
I can't
going.
Tell you it was a wild time. It wasn't.
What about the Laurent household, Jules? Did your family all stay up?
Yeah, so the two boys stayed up. The little girl that you heard crying yesterday went to bed earlier. The boys played online with their friends. We had a quiz on Zoom with our friends, because as you know, here in London, and Ian was the same, It's very strict rules. You can't have people, guests coming to your house for dinner or for a party. So we stayed, all the five of us. It was really cool. And we stayed until midnight and then watched a bit of NBA. And then
Jules,
went to sleep. You know, that's what we do.
Jules, any of your family play the accordion?
Don't
give it all that.
No.
Hey, oh, hi, ho.
We played. Weed frog leg, weed frog's legs as we're playing the accordion with the beret and the baguette and the arm.
Accordion!
Yeah.
The garlic around your neck. Right, Stevie, any other stereotypes you'd like, to bring up?
I'm sure I could if you let me.
Stevie, you're good at resolution. What's your one resolution or wish for 2021? I'm sure there's a big list of them that you made last night before you went to bed.
Oh. Actually, my granddaughter last week was asking me if I was pregnant. So there's my New Year's. She asked me if I was having a baby and if I was pregnant. So I'm like, I think I know what my New Year's resolution is going to be.
Wow. So what sort of form will the diet take, Stevie?
I told you before, just put less in my mouth.
Ian, what's your resolution wish for the new year?
No, it's a serious one. I think the one we've all got, an end to this pandemic and a return to normal.
Oh, we need more viral videos from you, Ian. That'd be good as well.
I think I'm running out of ideas quick.
Jules?
Like I said in yesterday's show, I think it's for us, for me, to see family again. And I think it goes for everybody else who can't see their family right now. Wherever you are in the country, I really hope that 2021 will give you the opportunity again.
Which club between PSG and City, Jules, is more likely to sign Lionel Messi? Which club between those two would be a better option for Leo to spend his remaining career years? I want an answer, please.
I think that, you know, really, I'm being objective. I think there's pros and cons in both. I think, you know, playing with Sergio Aguero would surely appeal to Leo Messi, but Aguero only has 6 months left on his current contract. So what happens next season? It's the same for Angel Di Maria. They're very good friends. I'm sure Messi would like to play with Di Maria, but Di Maria has only 6 months left on his current contract. Where will he be next season? I think Pochettino, being Argentine like Messi, similar culture, language, etc., it's quite appealing, but it's not as appealing as playing again for Pep Guardiola. I think Paris as a city is maybe more appealing than Manchester, no offense to please Mancunians. But I think there's really pros and cons. But I think financially, if you just look at the numbers, and if PSG really want to keep Mbappe and Neymar, I just cannot see, and I promise you I'm trying to find a way, you cannot have Neymar, Mbappe and Messi with their current wages in the same squad. It's just simply impossible. Whereas at City, I guess they might find a way, maybe, of making it work for them financially.
Ian, could you explain to an American the over-the-top love affair Englishmen seem to have with Manchester United? It looks to me that Liverpool has just a storied past, but doesn't get the giddiness United does.
Oh, we're entering here into a tribal minefield. We will be absolutely besieged on social media, anything you say about that rivalry. But why did the love affair with Manchester United in the nation start? Well, I think it goes all the way back to the late 1950s when the Munich air disaster and the wave of sympathy for that club at that time. So I think, in short, that is where it all started. And I don't think there was a Liverpool-Manchester United rivalry back then. That's something that's grown up in recent years, probably since, you know, Sir Alex Ferguson was the Manchester United manager and came in. He said he wanted to knock Liverpool off their perch. And, of course, that has set off a very, very bitter feud, which lasts to this day.
Who were your big rivals, Stevie, when you were playing for Liverpool?
Manchester United.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't quote me on this, but I believe it all started in the early 60s and had nothing to do with football, the rivalry between Manchester and Liverpool. It was about the canals between Manchester and Liverpool. That's how the rivalry started, and then it went on to the football pitch when Liverpool and Shankly came in the mid-60s and transformed Liverpool's actual football team. So the football rivalry started then, but the actual rivalry between the two cities was all about a canal, to be honest with you.
Stevie, has Salah become too arrogant after his previous seasons? He elects himself to shoot most of the time, but seems to have lost his touch.
He's doing nothing they didn't do previously. The only difference is that he's not quite hitting the net as regularly. And is actually standing on it a little more often than he used to. But he's, I don't think his attitude has changed whatsoever. No, not at all. I don't see it as that at all. Right now, his form's not as great as it could be, but there may be things wrong, but I would say arrogance is not one of the things that I would associate with Mohamed Salah.
Right then, boys, what about this? If you could show someone who's never watched football one match to get them to love the game, which match do you pick and why? I'll start. Everton-West Ham, obvious. Meanwhile, Ian?
Oh, that's an easy one for me. I'm definitely going to go for that game in which Paolo Rossi starred at the World Cup. I mean, Paolo Rossi, who sadly is no longer with us, but he got a hat-trick in that match, and it was a beautiful, beautiful game. Italy against Brazil at the World Cup in Spain in 1982. Show that to somebody, and if they didn't enjoy it, well, they were never going to fall in love with football. And I think it would convert a few people.
Jules?
I think I might go all the way back to 1970 and that World Cup in Mexico and the semi-final between Italy and Germany first, the 4-3 and the whole the drama, the suspense, everything, Beckenbauer, all of that. Although the final, just a few days later, the 4-1 win by Brazil against Italy with that incredible team goal, maybe the best team performance we've ever seen in a World Cup, that final from Brazil. But I still think that the 2005 Champions League final in Istanbul between Milan and Liverpool, simply because you sat there, you watched that first half. It's an exceptional performance by Milan, one of the greatest teams ever put together. And then you said to him, but wait, you still haven't seen all of it. This is not what football is about. Football is about, you can still win, regardless of what the score is. If you still believe, you can still win. And then show him that second half, and then extra time, and then the penalties. And then I'm sure after that, he'd be in love with football.
Stevie?
I can't disagree with Italy-Brazil. Can't disagree either with the Germany-France. Can't disagree with the Istanbul. But I guess if it's a new supporter, you want to show them something new, something recent. And you couldn't get anyone better than Liverpool against Barcelona at Anfield. I mean, you talk about everything. Great football, great goals, drama, excitement. I mean, every single thing that you want in a game of football was in that game as well. So, listen, any one of those four would do the game proud. I just think probably a recent game would be better for a newer supporter.
Yeah, like PSG Barcelona maybe as well, Jules.
I knew you were going to say that. I don't know why. You know what? I had a feeling.
Oh, I wish you'd thought of that.
You, but especially you, Daniel Thomas, was going to say that, which is cheap. It's so cheap.
It is.
It was a great game, though, Jules.
Ian, not you, Ian. Surely you're better than that.
Yeah. Ian, who's better, Stevie in his prime or Alexander Arnold?
Oh, well, they're very different type of players. Alexander-Arnold has not yet been named as Footballer of the Year.
No.
And Steve Nicol, I want to spare his blushes, was named the Footballer of the Year and could play in several
at
the back as well. So I'm diplomatically going to say, for longevity over a long, long period and with lots of medals, it's still Stevie.
You got the trophy behind you, Stevie.
I certainly do, right?
There you are, lovely. Ruben Dias has had a similar impact to City as Van Dijk had to Liverpool, Stevie, but it seems he isn't talked about enough.
I think that's just purely to do with how things are going at Manchester City right now. You know, when Van Dijk came in, he transformed them into European champions and Premier League champions. Dias right now has transformed City's defence into a real tight, solid unit that gives them a platform to go and win trophies. So, again, you know, as usual, the decider is the trophy cabinet. And I think that's because the Van Dijk, that extra little bit, was what pushed Liverpool through that final hurdle.
Ian, since it's highly unlikely that you've commentated on a game that finished 9-9, this is a discussion, ongoing discussion. Steve, you'd prefer to watch a 0-0 than a 9-9. What was the most memorable 0-0 game that you called, Ian? Gosh.
I'm glad I had advance notice of that. I actually, when you think of it, I've probably, and all the guys too, we probably covered a few 0-0s that have been better than 3-3s. But one sticks out, now you come to mention it, and that was go back to 1997 when Glenn Hoddle was the England manager and they had to go to Italy to get a point to qualify for the World Cup. That was no easy task at all, and it was a bit of a tactical masterclass by Glenn that night. England played very well, might have even won it at the end. I think Ian Wright hit the post, and he tried all kinds of subterfuge as well. On the night before the game, Gareth Southgate was in the squad when he was just a player, and Glenn Hoddle told him to limp around the pitch during the training session to make Italy think he wouldn't be playing. Well, he was playing in quite a pivotal role in that game. But I'd pick that one out, I think, because it was really, really tense and exciting. But that's a pretty biased English view.
Final question. We all know that Shaka drove a Maserati, but what car did everyone else drive in their heyday? Well, it's only the only former player is Stevie, and I can't. What's the poshest car you ever had, Stevie?
The poshest? It was an Audi. Oh. An Audi Quattro.
Wow.
Yeah, that was after that. That was it.
That shocks me.
Before, Stevie. Before and after that.
Why did you? Was that a freebie?
No. No, I got it at a reasonable price. I knew Kenny knew the dealer.
And that was it?
You got a good price on it.
After the Audi, you just went, that
after
was it?
After that, no. Ah, that was it. Back to the usual, getting the wains in, getting the dogs in. Well, we used to have three dogs. So everyone had to be around the dogs, the kids, and the shopping.
Right.
So Maserati's not good for either three of those.
I can't imagine you in a million years in a Maserati, Stevie. That is it. Thank you very much. That brings to the end of today's show. Lots of action, of course, coming up over the next few days. Be sure to join us.